Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. In the last Dhamma talk, we were discussing about the first noble truth, the noble truth of suffering. In there, the first time Buddha talked about this discourse on his first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana, okay, the turning of the wheel of Dhamma. And there the Buddha said, birth is suffering, aging and decay is suffering, and death is suffering. And also, to associate or living with people that you don't like and love is suffering. And to become apart and away from people that you can like and love is also suffering. 5. And then 6 is not getting what you want is suffering. And the 6 is one, two, three, four, five, six. And then 7 is 5 aggregates of clinging is suffering. That's the way he opens it up. And we talk quite in details about the birth, aging, and death. And also to say certain the people that you don't like and love, and to be apart and away from people that you like and love. We talk about it. And the 6th one, not getting what you want is suffering. That one is, you can look in 2 parts. One part is something that is very obvious and everybody knows about it, experience about it. To give an example is the most obvious one is, let's take a child. So that become very obvious and pronounced. A child's one a toy. Keep on asking the parents to get it. But for any reason or some reason, the parents cannot deliver the toy to the child. And at that moment, how does the child react? Really screaming, yelling, and wailing out. And the child suffer a lot because he or she could not get what he or she wants. That's a very obvious. And also adults too, there are many things, but adults are a little bit of more intelligence and a little bit of more pretending not to affect them. Because of that, it is not as obvious as a child. But still, it affects a lot. Not getting what you want is suffering. That's the obvious one. But what Buddha really means in that is, let's see, we don't want to get sick We don't want to have disease, especially the terminal one and serious one. But we still get it. We want not to have any form of illness or disease. But still, we are contracted by it. There's nothing you can do. And also, we want not to get old. Get gray, vision becomes blur, hearing loss, tooth falls off. We want not to have these happen to us, but still it happens. And then we want not to die, but still everybody's final moment is death. Those are the things we don't want it, but still it happens. That is where the point is. Not getting what you want is suffering. So in here we use the word suffering, suffering, suffering. The original word is called dukkha. The most popular translation is the word suffering. Yeah, the meaning of the suffering is under dukkha. And also some people translate as unsatisfactoriness. There's a lot of condition and stages and situation that's totally unsatisfactory. That is how they translate the word to unsatisfactoriness. Yes, that meaning is also under dukkha. And fairly recently, some people start to translate dukkha as stressed. Stress is also under the term of dukkha. So there is no equivalent term in English to present the word dukkha. Stress is dukkha, unsatisfactoriness is dukkha, suffering is dukkha. All of these are under the terms of dukkha. But when you look at the whole thing, discuss in detail, you know what kind of things encompass under the word or the meaning of dukkha. Birth, aging, death. Associating with one you don't love, not to associate with one that you don't love, not getting what you want. These are all suffering. And also the seventh one is five aggregates of clinging is suffering. And we talk quite in detail about what that five aggregates of clinging on the last week. We already covered it. But just the defining what this five aggregates is. So based on that five aggregates, everything in this universe that you can define, everything what is happening, physical or mental, everything is suffering. Okay? Hate is suffering. Love is suffering. Okay? Anger is suffering. Happiness is suffering. Sorrow is suffering. Joy is suffering. That one is quite difficult to accept for us. So in here, we need to understand types of dukkha. Once you understand the types of dukkha, all types of suffering, then we can see a little more clearly. The obvious one, okay, birth, we agree. Decay, we agree. Death, we agree. And also associating with people that you don't like, we agree. Associating or depart or away from people that you love, loved ones, is also suffering, we agree. Not getting what we want. It's also obvious, we agree. These are the very obvious ones. So as it is very obvious, we all agree and nothing to dispute about it. And why? Why does Buddha taught us or put it in the his sermon discourses, these obvious ones as dukkha? We don't need Buddha to tell us this is dukkha. So we need to understand why Buddha put it in. So let's try and expand our understanding about it. First and foremost, look at Buddha's own experience. While he was a prince, okay, up to the age of 29, his father, knowing that when he grew up, could become one or the other. One is the monarch of the great empire, not just a little country, great empire. And another one is Buddha. The father wanted him to become the great emperor, not Buddha. So what he did was he tried to keep his sons to be as happy as possible and put all the pleasure around him, and he is totally in sync with pleasure. And he tried to, not only that he put pleasure, he tried to keep away anything that could make him feel sad or depressed or sorrow or unhappy. So anything he keeps away, to the point of he didn't even put old people in front of him. Okay. Everybody he associated with us around his age. So that kind of situation he was kept at up to the age of 29. He got married at 16 and lived with full pleasure. Summer palace, winter palace, rainy season palace. In other words, building that's suitable for each season, that kind of nature, he put it. So he simply enjoyed and just simply lived. But one day, when he got around the age of 29, he was traveling to his garden. A garden means like a big park, just for the kings and the queens and the royals. He was traveling. While he was traveling, I'll just make the story short and detail. He saw people who are sick and ill, and he was surprised to see these things. And he saw people really old age. They are bended and hunched. They have to walk with a cane. Some people cannot even move quite well, gray hair and so on. As he didn't see, he even asked his attendant, what is that? Oh, those are the sick people, those are the old age people. And then he saw death, a corpse, a funeral. What is that? That much his father kept everything away from him. And then he began to see those things. And finally, of course, he saw a monk, let's call it a hermit. And what is that? So weird looking robes and the head shaven. Oh, that's a holy person. What's a holy person doing? He's searching for truth so that he can overcome suffering. Hopes that he could overcome birth, old age and suffering. He was quite intrigued by it. But regardless, that whole thing, just him seeing this thing that he had never seen before, sick and disease and old age and death, that really shook him. And then he started to think about things, contemplate about things, and suddenly he saw the life. Is everybody go through that? Yes, everybody go through that. Your father will go through this, eventually you will go through that. So he was really shocked and he didn't want to go through that stages. That's what happened. So even though these are the obvious suffering, it has impact. Okay. Not only that, if we look at our life, let's reflect upon life. Of course, we just live our life on and on, day after day, year after year. But there are some times it greatly affects us due to a sickness or disease, to yourself or to the one around you, to the loved one or to friends. Suddenly cancer strike or heart attack and so on. When those things happen to you and to the people that are close to you, it really shook you. And you began to see life with a different light, different perspective. And the same thing, okay, especially young kids, children, teenagers, and even young people, some young people around 20s, when they see really old people, they just associate with friends around the age. Once in a while, they see really old people, 80, 90, all wrinkled, and then bent over. The kids say, yucky, it's ugly. Especially children, they just say as it is. It's very ugly. Old people, very ugly. That kind of a thing. So in other words, when sometime you see these kind of things, it shocks you and you start looking at life with a different perspective. And also death, especially the people that are close to you. When it happens, it shook you and you start looking life with a different light. So in other words, these kind of decay, old age and death, it's a trigger point. It really gives you a trigger point in life. Having people with great serious or terminal disease, at that time you change. It's called a sense of urgency. In Pali, it's called Samvega. You have that. So even though it is the very obvious suffering that even though everybody know, at a certain stage, a certain condition, a certain time, when it struck to you, especially that you can relate very closely, it really shook you and you began to look at life with a different light, different perspective. In other words, a sense of urgency arise in you. That's a fact. Sometimes some people have their life, the whole life lucky, but once in a while something very, very stressful situation arises. And at that time, the way you look at life changes. And the way you approach life changes, and you start even looking for something other than different from what you are doing and what you are living. That kind of things, that kind of effects can bring about a person with old age, disease, sickness, and death. And also life-changing, very stressful, okay? Not just normal, average. Extremely stressful situation can change your perspective of life. I believe that's why Buddha put it in there, because it is the trigger point in some of the people's life to change the perspective and to change the way they live. And they start searching for something. So even though it is a very obvious suffering, they call it a dukkha dukkha, suffering of the suffering. Why did Buddha put? And I believe it is for that reason. It gives you a total different perspective when a certain condition and a certain situation and a certain people that you are close to get affected, give you a change in life and such. Automatically, they're just changing how they live. That kind of intense effect has it. That's why it is dukkha dukkha, and that's why it is in the sutra. So one must know there's one type of dukkha, it's called dukkha, okay? Obvious suffering. No need to explain about. But why? If it's already there, we don't need Buddha to talk about or to know about it. But the effect that it has under a set of conditions is immense, to the point of life-changing situation. Dukkha. So don't just simply say, birth is suffering, old age is suffering, death is suffering. Always contemplate about it, always reflect upon it. And then there's another type of suffering the Buddha taught us. This is called suffering bring about by the change, or change is suffering. There's another type of suffering. In Pali, it's called viparinama dukkha. So what is this suffering due to change, or change is suffering? Of course, we all live in our life every day as usual. Sometime we have a good day, sometime we have a bad day, and we move on. Okay, without really much, especially when there's a bad day, you just want to get over with it and want to be to the good mood or good situation or good environment. That is how we always pursuing our life. That is how we always trying to control and change our life. From the bad to the good, from the bad to the good. And we try to look in that way, and we are always striving to get something good, not the bad. And we become habituated by it. That's how we live. But we don't really see and look differently or deeply. All that we know is, as soon as something uncomfortable come, unpleasant come, we look for a way to eliminate it and just destroy it and bring about something comfortable and pleasant and what is acceptable. That is, we always do it. But in here, the Buddha showed us to look at it in a different way. Instead of approaching life in that way, you could look at all your happy moments. Okay? Happy moments, good time, pleasant times. These come in our life. Okay? Periodically, sometime in wave, sometime sporadically. It's different from one to the other based on the karma that they have accumulated. These happy moments come. Just pick up one moment that you have on your own personal experience, a happy moment, and see how long does it last. Okay. Even something that is great, let's say if you are working, let's say you got a big promotion. When you got a big promotion, oh, happy. And then might even go out in the evening for a drink and celebrate it, go out for dinner. How many days are you happy about it? Or how many hours are you in the state of happiness about it? It comes and gone. Okay, we think that happiness is there forever. But happiness moments are there, but they are very fleeting. Okay, whatever. You have a child, or you have a grandchildren, or long-lost friend, you just bump into the road, and so on and so on. So many things. You can imagine yourself what kind of things makes you excited and joyful and happy. And see how long does it last. Not long. It's just gone. They come, and it's very fleeting. And once it is gone, you come back to the old grind. There's no more happiness. You just see normal. But if you try to compare with the moment of happiness, the state of happiness, that is not quite desirable. And sometimes, not only that, what we call average moment, it becomes distressful moment, depressed moment, Okay. Sad moments come in. These are always just around the corner. So that is what it means by change. Suffering bring about by change. These mental states, mental moments, what we consider happy, joyful, pleasant, they are still always momentary. They come and gone, they come and gone, they come and gone. We reminisce about it and we try to hold on about it. But we can't. And everything changes into the states of stressful nature. Even in a good day, you're talking something and suddenly there's a disagreement coming and you argue and you got angry. That's gone. So Buddha showed us to look from that point. All these happy moments, good moments, things like that, they come and they are fleeting and they are gone. And whenever that change comes in, that is a state of suffering. That's a state of unsatisfactoriness. That's a, you are in a state of stress. Business good for a month. Next month, business is really slow. Unless we can put example about it. That is called Viparinama Dukkha, state of change. And also how fast it changes. Sometimes it is on a nanosecond it changes. Let's say you are all having a gathering with the friends and stuff like that. Have a dinner and talking about it and laughing and joking. And then there's a phone ring. You pick it up. And then the news is, let's say, one of the person who you are very close, who you love, passed away or got into the hospital or car accident and then ambulance and gone to the hospital. Suddenly the fear strike. It doesn't even last 1 second. From that happy, joyful moment drastically change into the stressful, worrying, full of anxiety moment. It can change on a dime. In a fraction of a second. That is Viparinama Dukkha. That is change due to the condition of change. That condition of change is suffering. That's the second type of suffering the Buddha showed us. So we already have two types now. And then the third one. The third one is not obvious and definable, easily pinnable like the first two. Okay, the first one is really easy. The second one is you have to change your perspective, how you approach, and have a little bit of a reflection and put a little bit of a philosophy into it. But still it is obvious, it affects you. The sensation of pleasant sensations and unpleasant sensations are very obvious. That's the second type of dukkha. And then the third type of dukkha is called Sankhara Dukkha. Sankhara Dukkha is something it is not obvious. Something that is not obvious. Not only that not obvious, even if you look into it in a normal state of intelligence, you won't be able to figure it out. And even if you know philosophically and by through definition what this dukkha, this suffering is, you'll say, oh yeah, it makes sense. But it doesn't affect you at all. Doesn't affect you at all. That is called Sankhara Dukkha. Okay. Can go a long way to explain what Sankhara Dukkha is, but let's go right to the point. Right to the point is, to define it, what that Sankhara Dukkha is. It is everything that is arising and passing away is suffering. Everything that becomes and ceased is suffering. That's what Sankhara Dukkha is. Everything that arises and passes away is suffering. That becomes and ceases to exist is suffering. In other words, anything that arises and passes away, in one word, it is impermanence. It comes and it goes. That is suffering. Yeah, if you look at it philosophically or even intellectually, it's very easy. We become, we are born, and finally we die. Oh, a big spectrum. 80, 90, 100 years. Oh yeah, it makes sense. That's good. That much we can see, quite accepted. Or even if we take pictures, every decade our pictures, and you see how much changes took place. Okay, when I was a baby, when I was 10 years old, 20 years old, 70 years old, 80 years old, you can see the change. Oh, it becomes and gone, it becomes and gone. Okay. Oh, it is impermanence. You can see all the pictures. Look at it. I was 16, and here, look at me, I'm 60. Okay. You look at it, and philosophically and intelligently, you can accept it, but it doesn't really sink into you. It doesn't really affect you to have a very prominent change. That's everybody like this. It's okay. That's the way we go. What can we do? And then what happened? You live on as you always do. Nothing really changes. That Sankhara Dukkha, you cannot really see it. But when Buddha talked about suffering dukkha, okay, the first two dukkha is, yeah, right, issue, he point us, it also is useful as a trigger point, and so on and so forth. But what he really means that life is suffering, existence is suffering, he means the third one. Sankhara Dukkha. Anything that arises and passes away is Dukkha. That is where it comes in. And if you truly understand that, not just intellectual understanding, not just philosophical understanding, if you truly understand that, only then you can see you understand the First Noble Truth, the Noble Truth of suffering. You truly understand what suffering, dukkha, means. And when you understand the third type of dukkha, you truly understand it. Again, not intellectually, not logically, not with reason and rhyme and philosophy, nothing. And how then, how do we understand that, to understand really? It's experiential understanding. You have to experience that rising and passing away, the birth and death. Of what? Okay, we know we burn and we die after 60, 70, 100 years. Not that. This one is, if you really look at it, what is you, what is me, what is us? It is, we call it self, this self. And this self is made up of what? It's made up of mind and matter. Okay. Mind or consciousness, matter or this body, mind and matter. Or in Pali what is called? Nama and Rupa. Nama is mind, Rupa is matter. So that is how you look at what we call self. Why we look at this nama and rupa? When the Buddha said all these, the Four Noble Truths, okay, Noble Truth of suffering, the cause of suffering is craving or grasping, and so on and so on. He wasn't referring to the whole universe. He was referring to the living beings. Okay? Referring to the living beings. That noble truth is for the living beings, not the mountains, not the ocean, not the sky. But regardless, the mountain, the ocean, the sky, they also arises and passed away. But you cannot call that as a suffering. You can call that suffering when you know and when you experience. The mountain, the sky, the ocean does not have consciousness. Consciousness is the one that knows. The mind is the one that knows and that feels. These physical material, mountain, the earth, the sun, the universe, the material world does not have consciousness or the mind. As they don't have that, you cannot call that suffering. Suffering is must be understood, experienced. So this suffering is totally for the living beings. And as we are humans, we focus and we discuss on the human realm, of course. But it also applies to every living realms, same thing. So that is something we should be note at. It is for the living beings. So here we are a combination of mind and matter. And this mind and matter, even intellectually we know, especially the matter, scientifically we can call it atom or proton, neutron, electron, okay, because subatomic particles. And nowadays it's even go finer and finer and finer. And when we are scientifically investigating, they know that these things are arising and passing away very, very quickly. Scientifically, they can even prove up to the point of 10 million of a second, matter arises, and in 10 million of a second, the matter just disappears. That is the lifespan of matter. That is a science that's proved it. But over 2,500 years ago, the Buddha, through his own practice, declared that the lifespan of a matter is more than a billionth of a second. Okay? We are still far, far away to that time. A matter arises within a billionth of a second, it just disappears. That much. And in that place, of course, another matter arises and disappears. Another matter arises and disappears. Let's say in one spot a matter arises and disappears. So within a second, there are actually, just for the sake of conversation or communication, 1 billion matters arises and pass away in a second on the same spot. But one has to arise and disappear. In that place, another come in and disappear. In that place, another come in and disappear. That is how fast. Only the Buddha can see it. With people with great meditation power can see a lot faster moment. And these are the moments based on the capacity of the person who are observing it differs. For you, a moment might be a second. For the next person, it might be 100th of a second. That's a moment. And the next person with a deep concentration, it can be 1,000th of a second is a moment. We all change. It all changed what the moment is, or the understanding of the moment, how by events happening. So regardless, doesn't matter whether you can see in 1 second a matter arise and pass away, or 1/100th of a second arise and pass away. That's good enough for us. Even if you can see about 1/100th of a second, that means in 1 second you have experienced 100 times the matter arises and passed away. To be able to see that, you must have a great concentration power to be able to see that, to be able to experience that. Before we understand intellectually, before we believe and we accept, because science have proved up so much, science is our modern religion. We believe. But that belief, that acceptance doesn't really change anything for you. But when you personally experience this, that the matters or rupa are arising and passing in such a great speed, in one observation, two observation, it shook you. It totally changed your perspective about life. Just like the dukkha-dukkha. When your loved one dies, children or parents die, it suddenly shook you and it changed your perspective. At least it gives you onto the path to search for something, to do something. We all approach different way, do different things. Just like that, when you begin to experience, when the matters are arising and passing away in one observation, 20 times, 30 times, 40, 50 times, you can't even count. Beyond about 10, you can't count, but you can sense it, you can feel it. In that one observation, which is a fraction of a second, you can feel, you can sense about 30, 40, 50 materials arises and passed away. When you experience that, it totally changed the way you look at life. It totally changed the way you look at yourself. In other words, the view, the perspective of looking what self is changed. That is, we are only talking about rupa. And that one, we can get it from what? Mindfulness of the body. We are observing, okay, just for the operational purpose to practice, we observe rising movement, falling movement of the abdomen. We observe the stiffness and tension of sitting, standing, or pressure of touching, okay, lifting, pushing, dropping, and so on, bending, stretching. Why do we observe those things? The goal, the immediate goal is so that we can see that these arises and pass away at a great speed. And before you know that, it passed away at a great speed. What happened? You cling onto this. It's me. It's my body. It's my hand. It's my skin, my teeth, my eye. We hold on. We solidified it. As we hold on to this body and the form, we solidify the concept of self. And that's how self becomes. That how I becomes. That how ego is built. But when you see these are breaking down at such a great speed, you simply understand without even thinking, there is nothing you can hold on. There is nothing permanent. Everything is disappearing, dissolving at a great speed. And when you experience that, previously, the idea, the concept of holding on to this beautiful body starting to dissipate and dissipate and dissipate. It weakens first. And then eventually, you don't hold on. You simply notice it's a process. Everything come and go. And as we don't understand the true process and the true phenomenon, we have a wrong view about it, and we identified it as a self, a being, a person, an individual. And we are only talking about half aspect of self, only rupa. The same thing when we are observing nama, the mind. Okay? The mind, according to the Buddha. Let's say, if a matter arises and passes away in 1 billionth of a second, the mind arises and passes away in 17 billionth of a second. Their lifespan is 17 times shorter than the lifespan of matter, according to the Buddha. So the mind even passed away 17 times faster than the matter. And here, even in the matter, we cannot really fathom or really count, but we know, we feel, we sense. So when the mind calms, you observe what it is. First and foremost is the knowing consciousness, and also all the mental associates, mental factors. They come and go, come and go, come and go. You observe the anger, you observe happiness, you observe the joy. And slowly, you understand how fast they are changing. How fast the happiness can change into sadness. How fast the joy can change into anger as you are observing them. How fast they disappear. That's it. We observed, we use mindfulness as a tool, but not just ordinary mindfulness, but superior mindfulness, correct mindfulness. That's important. Nowadays we use the word mindfulness, especially in the West, very loosely. But the mindfulness the Buddha intends and taught us is very superior, powerful mindfulness that can penetrate into the, based on our own capacity, 10,000 of a second or 1 million of a second. We don't have a machine to measure, but that's how you can experience fleeting. And when you go deeper and deeper and deeper, you will know that is true. Because at one point in your experience, you'll find that time becomes distorted. You will personally experience distortion of time. In other words, time is not real. Time is simply a perception. Space becomes distorted. When they become distorted, eventually time and space also gone. When the time and space is gone, that is called the end of all suffering. Within the realm of time and space, that is mind and matter. Mind and matter cease to exist out of time and space. So, you will actually experience these changes at the great speed, how fast they arise and how fast they passed away in your mindfulness observation. If you can apply superior form of mindfulness and observation, this doesn't come easily and readily. You need patience. You need persistence. You need determinations. You have to pour in lots and lots of effort and do repeatedly, repeatedly, repeatedly with full commitment. Not just coming once a week, sitting for about an hour, or just sitting about 15 minutes or 30 minutes a day, every day. That is just, you are planting a seed. You are planting a seed. But if you want to go to this deep level, all the things we said is required. Repeat it, persistent patience, effort, and doing the method correctly, then you will come to know this, the great speed of arising and passing away of both mind and matter. Only then you understand the word impermanence. And what is impermanence? Impermanence is things arises and passed away. Anything that arises and passes away, anything that becomes and dissolves is impermanent. And that is sankhara dukkha, suffering due to the nature of arising and constant nature of arising and passing away at great speed or impermanence. At that moment, you truly understand the first noble truth. Dukkha sissa, the noble truth of suffering. That is the first noble truth. That's why the Buddha said, the first noble truth, the noble truth of suffering must be thoroughly understood. So with that, we will conclude our talk. And that will be, I think, sufficient enough to understand what suffering or dukkha sissa is. May all of you be able to practice Satipatthana Vipassana meditation precisely and correctly, and may you be able to understand the noble truth of suffering as soon as possible. Sadhu, 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 Buddham bhujemi, Dhammam bhujemi, Sangam bhujemi.